Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Soups Ain't Always Heroes, Inside the Complex Characters and Twisted Psychology of the Boys. Edited by Lynn S. Zubernus and Matthew Snyder. Read by Joe Hempel. Introduction. Lynn S. Zubernus. Prime Video's hit streaming show, The Boys, follows what happens when superheroes, who are as popular as celebrities, and Vought International, the company that manufactures them, abuse their power instead of using it for good, turning the superhero genre on its head. Based on the best-selling comic by Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson, the streaming series was developed by Ennis fan Eric Kripke and Seth Rogen. As the show follows a vigilante group called The Boys on their mission to expose the Supes for what they are, and their repeated slides into the same moral gray areas that they're fighting against, it also serves up some striking parallels to the real world. Perhaps the most accurate way to describe the show is this. It is a wild ride. From the start, The Boys has packed so many ups and downs and twists and turns into its 8-episode seasons that I invariably end up feeling dizzy afterward. In a good way. Anyone who loves roller coasters knows this feeling. But the best thing about The Boys is that once the adrenaline rush has subsided, it makes you think. Your brain ends up working overtime after watching an episode, trying to make sense of each character's evolution, trying to suss out the show's unapologetic real-life parallels. Where is the story going? What's it trying to say? I love getting to the end of an episode and having questions like these rolling around in my brain, keeping me awake. But if it just made me think, I probably wouldn't have been bouncing in anticipation for each new season. I think for a living as a psychologist, and then try to make other people think as a professor. So sometimes I just want to sit back and be entertained. One of the teaser trailers for the 3rd season of The Boys was set to Imagine Dragons, the lyrics asking repeatedly, "Is this entertaining?" Well, the answer is a resounding yes. I laughed. I was sad. I was horrified. I had to turn away a few times when it was too much. I scratched my head with a hypothesis slowly forming, and then sometimes triumphantly fist-bumped being right, and sometimes gasped out loud being wrong. I came to the show in its first season via Supernatural. Eric Kripke, the showrunner behind The Boys, was also the creator of Supernatural and its showrunner for the first 5 years. He changed my life with that show, and I will basically watch anything he puts his creative touch to, at least long enough to give it a chance. Was I ever glad I did that with The Boys. From the very first episode, I was intrigued. And then I was hooked. As a writer, I covered The Boys from the start, and my discussions with Kripke and the cast made it clear just how thoughtful they were about the show. I knew other journalists and psychologists and fans who were watching were, too. We all wanted to compare notes and go deeper into what makes this show tick. And that's how this book came to be. It's a collection of chapters sourced from a wide range of people with unique insights into the show and the characters, including The Boys co-creator Derek Robertson, cast members, psychologists, professors, journalists, and artists. The essays in the book are as unflinching as the show itself. One of the things that make the show interesting is its social commentary, including what it has to say about fame and celebrity and the power of media and fake news. Fake news is used in the series to craft the narrative that Vought once disseminated, with anything negative, likely pesky collateral damage, immediately covered up. There's even an inverse news show called A Closer Look that does reenactments of real-life events that involve the Supes, in which a gray-haired Walter Cronkite type spouts nothing but carefully crafted lies and an easily consumed false narrative. The creation, manipulation, and suppression of the truth is an ongoing theme in the supplementary content that Prime Video puts on its Vault International YouTube channel and social media accounts, too. Several chapters explore the corporate manipulation we see on the show, the kind we have all become frighteningly accustomed to in real life, drawing parallels to the Hollywood corporate machine, real-life media PR, and the dark side of the American dream. Contributors also examined the other themes that the show tackles, exposing the impact of racism, sexism, prejudice, and white nationalism, as well as the toll that toxic masculinity takes on both individuals, including or maybe especially characters in The Boys, and society. Using their expertise as psychologists, therapists, media experts, and sociologists, some writers analyze how damaging norms for how to be a man are passed on from generation to generation, and how narcissism develops and impacts both the individual and society. Others write from their own diverse perspectives about racism, white nationalism, homophobia, and sexism, on the show and in the real world. Through its complex characters, The Boys takes an unflinching look at what a slippery slope morality can be once someone decides to pursue fame or power, and our contributors follow the show's lead, focusing on the evolution of characters like Butcher, Huey, A-Train, Starlight, and Soldier Boy. Although less overt, the show also has a powerful story to tell about trauma and loss and the coping strategies we, as humans, use to keep going in their aftermath, something that impacts virtually every character on the series. Just as The Boys is ultimately hopeful in its message to always keep fighting, several chapters highlight the characters' resilience in the face of seemingly overwhelming challenges. The complicated and fascinating characters that populate The Boys take center stage here, discussed through the unique perspectives not only of our contributors, but of the actors who portray those characters. Jensen Ackles, Soldier Boy, Aya Cash, Stormfront, and Jim Beaver, Robert Singer, share in exclusive interviews how they bring their characters to life and explore the real-world issues their characters allow the show to so eloquently comment on. Nathan Mitchell, Black Noir, discusses the contradictions of his character and Irving's tragic story with contributor Tina Charles, and I include excerpts from my interview with showrunner Eric Kripke as I take a deep dive into Soldier Boy's journey and how the fandom traveled it with him. Derek Robertson takes us back to the origin of these iconic characters, sharing his experience of co-creating The Boys comics with writer Garth Ennis and the cultural context they arose from. The collection also includes excerpts from my interviews with cast members Anthony Starr, Homelander, Aaron Moriarty, Starlight, Karen Fukuhara, Kimiko, Jesse T. Usher, A-Train, Chase Crawford, The Deep, and Giancarlo Esposito, Stan Edgar, who share their thoughts on their characters and the show. Soups ain't always heroes, but that's not always a bad thing. While many of us have found inspiration in traditional superhero narratives, and will continue to do so, there's arguably something even more compelling about mere humans fighting against seemingly insurmountable odds. Go deeper. Deeper? With us inside the world of The Boys, where there's violence and corruption and depravity that reflects the real world. But there are always everyday people willing to stand up to the powers that be, and maybe even save the day. Creating The Boys, an interview with co-creator Derek Robertson. The Prime Video series The Boys is full of rich characters and has a memorable story that has captured the collective imagination. Those characters first appeared in the comics on which the show is based. The inaugural issue of The Boys comic was published in 2006. A creative collaboration between writer Garth Ennis and artist Derek Robertson. Looking back, 2006 seems like a very different world, and yet The Boys seems more relevant than ever. I asked Robertson, now an executive producer on the series, to reflect back on how the iconic characters and world of The Boys came to be, and what he and Ennis had hoped to accomplish. Lynn Zubernus. I asked Robertson how the creative environment differed in 2006 and what the thought process and motivation for creating the comics was. Speaking for himself and not for his collaborator, Robertson described the origin of The Boys. Derek. Things were very different in 2006. The Marvel Cinematic Universe didn't really exist beyond the Spider-Man movies. The CW wasn't really yet a thing for the DC Universe. Netflix was still in the DVD business. Comics and adaptations were still all about the mainstream characters, Ennis and I had done a lot of successful work at Marvel between 2000 and 2004, and he approached me about The Boys when I had wrapped my monthly run on Transmetropolitan, which ran from 1997 to 2003. The original idea was a pitch for the DCU, like his popular book Hitman. But as we got deeper into what he had in mind and how dark I wanted to take the art, we realized that approach wouldn't work. So we set out to make an original universe with archetype characters similar to the example set by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons with Watchmen. The enduring concept was that we were going to create a world where the superheroics and collateral damage from these massive battles that destroy buildings have actual consequences, and how those problems would be handled if it was in our real world, that it would all be tied up in money, PR, and politics. Ennis mused that superheroes would be like politicians, celebrities, and star athletes all rolled up in one, and Vought was the all-seeing, all-knowing corporation behind them. He reckoned that if there were real superheroes, they'd be as corrupt as anyone with vast money and power, and there'd be no one to hold them accountable. So what would stop them from just taking over? How do you stop a nuclear weapon when that source of destruction is an invulnerable human being with the ability to fly? That's where The Boys came in, as CIA shadow operatives that made sure someone could take them down if need be. I asked Robertson what they wanted to convey. Were they hoping to make change on a socio-political level, or just break away from and challenge the tropes of classic comics and characters? Derek. More the latter, I think. It was a funny idea to explore in the beginning, not really meant to be a statement on anything. For me personally, I wouldn't enjoy drawing literal Superman doing the horrible things Homelander does. I have a deeper affection for the DCU characters as I grew up on them, but Ennis's taste in comics were formed by 2000 AD and Beano, war comics and such. I grew up on Batman and Teen Titans. But I think it was the yin-yang of our creative dynamic that made The Boys work. For me, it was simply the opportunity to create original superheroes with Ennis, who is one of the best writers in comics. The collaboration between Robertson and Ennis seems uniquely effective, with Ennis's story becoming even more powerful as it came to life through Robertson's art. I asked him what the collaborative process was like and why he thinks it was so effective. Derek. I think we complemented each other's style. I had a tendency to push boundaries in the artwork, to drill down to the essence of what I was reading. Early on, we collaborated closely and developed the whole thing over the course of a few years while I was fulfilling my exclusive contractual duties with Marvel. I was sketching and thinking on things a lot. In my earliest concepts, I saw The Boys as a superhero team of their own, as they have powers in the comics. And in the beginning, there was an idea Ennis had that faded away, that they had to work in a group of five for their powers to work, and that's why Huey was recruited. I designed versions where they had these emblems on their jackets and stuff, but as we got into it, Ennis was clear they'd be more subtle than that, so we went for black leather trench coats. And while they mostly wore boots, I gave Huey Chuck Taylor's and that hoodie to set him apart from the group, as that would be his story arc, not quite fitting in. Those visual hints mean a lot to the story. Robertson shared some of the earliest sketches he did of The Boys on Twitter, and I wondered what attributes he included that were meaningful and core to the characters that remained through the comics and into the series and which did not. Derek. I was more trying to capture personality and attitude in those early sketches. A few things I came up with, like how Mother's Milk got his powers, and Ennis gave him that name, making the female Japanese, and borrowing Simon Pegg's likeness to give Huey that innocent but stalwart edge that Pegg brings to his Cornetto trilogy characters. DC found the comics too dark early on. I wondered if Ennis and Robertson considered taking a different approach, a less dark or subversive one, perhaps, although they ultimately stuck to their original vision. Derek. No, we agreed that toning it down would kill the book. People knew what they were getting, even if those at DC at the time hadn't been paying attention. It was an amicable split, and DC was gracious about giving us our rights back so we could take it to a new publisher. I was under exclusive contract with them, and they allowed me a carve-out to work on the title wherever it landed. I had no idea at the time it would get picked up so quickly. The series is also quite dark, but perhaps a bit less than the comics. Did Robertson see the streaming show as still effective in telling the story that was originally intended? Derek, I see the comics and television shows as having very different jobs to do as a means of storytelling. The way one absorbs a comic is very different from the way one passively watches a show. You go through a comic at your own pace, and mostly it's a private experience reading something, whereas a TV show is viewed from an audience perspective, and what works in the comic might not work on screen. That said, Seth Rogen and especially Eric Kripke were very clear from the very beginning how much they loved the comics, and I think they've done a fantastic job with the adaptation. Considering we're 3 seasons in and it's maybe Prime Video's biggest show, and ended 2021 with Emmy nominations, including Best Drama, that says to me it's all working out great, and I think the show goes pretty dark. I have friends and relatives apologizing that some can't handle it. I feel lucky that it's as good as it is. In the wrong hands, this property would just be a sloppy horror fest with gross-out humor and little substance. This show gets the allegory behind the fun. That's what made Ennis's writing so good, and what I tried to bring out in the art. I told Robertson that one of the things that captivated me about The Boys as a psychologist is that the characters are more nuanced and complex than often seen, especially in terms of a television series. No one, bad guys or good guys, is black and white. There's a realism to that, and it's even more overt in the comics. That kind of nuanced thinking seems even more important in the current socio-political context. I wondered if that was consciously chosen and decided on. Derek. Yes, that was essentially the theme from the beginning. That costumes don't make a person good or bad. It's character that counts. Butcher is not really a good guy. He's manipulative and self-centered. His reasons for wanting to take down Homelander are utterly personal. That it serves the greater good is almost a coincidence. The other thing that fascinates me about The Boys as a psychologist is that it is, at heart, a story about trauma and grief and loss and rage and how humans react to those. Its imperfect characters deal with all of that, and it's not glossed over. It's often ugly to look at, but that feels real and relatable. I asked whether Robertson was drawn to those sorts of stories and characters as a creator, and if so, did he have any thoughts as to why so many of us are as well? Derek. Yes, I've always had a dark sense of humor, and drawing gore and such is a way of working out my fears and demons. Ironically, I don't really like seeing anything like that in real life, but if I see a special effect that is wonderfully gruesome, I laugh and enjoy it. I saw Jaws in the theater when it came out in 1975, and it had a deep impact on me. I remember drawing that severed leg on the bottom of the ocean, and I was only 8 years old or so at the time. But I knew they made a fake leg that looked real, and that was amazing to me. I like gore and special effects, but only when in the service of a great story or a good joke. I think Sam Raimi's Evil Dead films are a perfect example. I think we all need a release valve in that regard to entertain our darker side, as Carl Jung said, our shadow selves. And fantasy is a great outlet for that. We want to feel powerful and see justice. It's cathartic to see the bully get punched and the villain captured. These characters are quite literally Robertson's vision. I asked him which characters stayed truest to the way he originally depicted them, and which have changed the most, transitioning from the comics to the screen. Derek. Physically, the truest versions are Starlight and the female/Kimiko. Such perfect casting. But all of the cast brings it to life so well. They all seem to understand the characters and bring out the essence of what we were going for, and in many ways elevated them. While Jack Quaid is much taller than I imagined Huey, he brings the great boyish innocence to the character, and his acting chops are solid. The meltdown he has with his father in season 1 is moving. When he screams, "Robin," in the pilot, you feel his loss. But what Anthony Starr brings to Homelander is so much more than how I ever imagined him. The nuance is incredible. Casting is a whole other thing with a team of people that handle that stuff. In Kripke, I trust. On that, I agree with him wholeheartedly. There were some significant changes from the comics to the TV series, so I wondered, how did that feel to Robertson as one of the creators of the characters and the story? Derek. Those creative changes all came from Kripke. We've discussed a bunch of them, as early on they surprised me. But it works, that's all I can say. And that he had deep thinking and reasons behind all the changes he made. Nothing in this show was done for the sake of change for change's sake. But you'd have to ask Kripke all about that. Soldier Boy joined the series in Season 3, and his story and character were quite different from the comic, although the look is similar. I asked Robertson what he sees as the differences and what he thought of Soldier Boy in the series and Jensen Ackles' portrayal. Derek. While I designed the Soldier Boy in the comics, artists John McCrea and the late Carlos Esquerra drew him in the interior continuity of the issues he appeared in. He seemed more of a joke, a throwaway character from my perception, meant as a stand-in for a Captain America type in the Mallory World War II flashback stories that Ennis wrote. In the Herogasm comics drawn by John McCrea, Homelander uses Soldier Boy sexually and manipulates him. I drew Soldier Boy being run over by a tank on the cover of The Boys number 53, and what was his replacement, the next incarnation of Soldier Boy, pissing his pants in a cowardly pose on the cover of The Boys number 33, belaying the nature of his supposedly heroic character. The show gave the character Soldier Boy much more resonance and substance and included their own nod to Captain America and Winter Soldier, while weaving in the important layer of Soldier Boy struggling with PTSD and being an icon of the 80s. Jensen Ackles, like Anthony Starr with Homelander, really made the character his own and brought layers of depth to him as we see how he's struggling to fit into the present day with his out-of-date attitudes and politics. There's a collaborative spirit that's clear between the original creators and the team that brings the series to life. I wondered what Robertson's experience being an executive producer has been like. Derek. Ennis and I share a co-executive producer title. It's a contractual thing, mostly. I have been to set a couple of times, and I have created artwork for the show, but as far as the day-to-day stuff, it's not a situation where I am consulted as much as included. I get to read the scripts and such, and when on set I'm greeted warmly and treated like part of the team. But just as I wouldn't want them coming to my studio and telling me how to draw comics, I don't show up and tell them how to make award-winning TV shows. I observe, and I'm learning a lot. I love it. I hope to have a more active role in future productions that I'm attached to. I'll stay tuned for all those future productions. Spotlight on the Boys' Fan Creativity. HR Zone 2. One of the great things about fandom, any fandom, is how the passion that fans feel for what they love inspires all sorts of creativity, and how the fan community supports and encourages those creations. Fans make videos and GIFs, and often hilarious memes, draw and paint and digitally create fan art, write fanfic and even craft figures of the show's iconic characters. The show's actors and even the boys' official social media accounts often share their favorite fan creations, which helps sustain the buzz about the shows during the long wait between seasons. The boys' action figures, seen by many online, are by one of the most talented artists in the fandom, Handsome Roundtree 2, aka HR Zone 2 Customs. His sculpted character figures are popular on social media and have even made the rounds to fan conventions to be appreciated by the actors they portray. We ask HR about his experience making these surprisingly lifelike creations. When did you begin crafting action figures? HR Zone 2. I was around 11 years old when I started collecting toys and action figures. I was always so curious how likeness can be captured in such a small size. So I got some clay and attempted to replicate a Buffy Summers figure. It fell to pieces. However, I just kept practicing and eventually I got better. I did go to school for fine arts, but I'm mainly self-taught with likeness sculpting. How long does it take, and what is the process of creating a figure? HR Zone 2. The time it takes to craft a statue or figure really depends on the complexity of the likeness. If the process goes well, it can take 2 months. Some people come to me naturally, while others take a lot more time and research. I've sculpted Jensen Ackles about 8 times over a decade, and it wasn't until my Soldier Boy figure that I felt I finally captured him to the best of my abilities. How did you become a fan of the boys? HR Zone 2. I remember seeing the trailer for the first season of The Boys and thinking that it was refreshing to see a grittier take on the superhero genre. When I learned that Eric Kripke was showrunning it, I knew that I had to check it out. The show is insane and raunchy, but I love how it calls out a lot of social issues while still having humor and heart. Cast members from The Boys have seen some of your creations. What was their reaction? HR Zone 2. The majority of my interactions with The Boys cast and crew have been through social media, but it has been very rewarding to see their reactions. Jack Quaid, Laz Alonso, and even the official The Boys Twitter account have all shared my work with supportive feedback. It really means a lot to me. I've shown Jensen some of my work over the years, but seeing his happy reaction to my Soldier Boy figure in person was very special. I'm very proud of that piece. So it's always nice when the talent can appreciate it in person. Trauma for Hire. How abuse, violence, and loss shape the boys. Travis Adams.
Better high than mental. Takes the edge off his PTSD.
Billy Butcher. Here comes a candle to light you to bed. Season 3, Episode 7. Traumatic obsession is an infiltration of the past into the present. Vedat Sar and Erdink Ozturk, Journal of Trauma Practice. When your job is saving people from disasters, bank robberies, terrorists taking over planes, or superpowered individuals who are abusing their power, traumatic events are going to happen. But trauma happens in more mundane and realistic situations too. And how we respond in the face of trauma, hardship, adversity, and loss can significantly impact the quality of life we experience, affecting our beliefs and values and relationships with others. The Boys showcases how these events can play out in a person's life and the long-lasting effects they can have. Certain experiences, childhood abuse, sexual assault, drug abuse, and witnessing traumatic deaths, have drastically changed the course of the characters' lives and often increased the likelihood of traumatic events later in life. The name of the game, Trauma Causes and Symptoms. Why would you get into this business if not to save the world? That's all I have ever wanted. Starlight, The Name of the Game, Season 1, Episode 1. Trauma responses are natural reactions to unnatural situations, such as violent assault, combat from war, the unexpected loss of a loved one, childhood abuse, and sexual assault. While not every person will experience a traumatic event in their lifetime, more than half of U.S. adults will. Traumatic events can occur at any place, at any time. In fact, the unpredictability itself contributes to what makes these events traumatic. And these events, whether experienced personally or witnessed firsthand, often turn into potential mental health concerns. It is important to note that not every traumatic event will result in a trauma response. There is no analytics team to predict when an event will leave its mark on a person. But when an individual begins to behave differently, when they become more irritable or find themselves ruminating on what they experienced or witnessed long after the event ended, it suggests a mental health diagnosis. In particular, those who enter military service or law enforcement or become first responders are exposed more often to traumatic events, and because of this have a 7 to 19% chance of developing a mental health disorder compared to the average person at 3.5%. Although intentionally placing yourself into harm's way allows you to prepare for the trauma to some extent, it may still impact you long term. Trauma experiences can be life-altering, leading to changes in mood, personality, and behavior. A person's body and mind can physically change, often shifting their perception in ways that are unhelpful for future experiences. ways that someone who has experience.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?